Well, there we go. It looks like we're starting. Well, maybe not. Looks like I'm frozen here.
Oh, no, you're not. You've unfrozen.
There we go.
You have your head just above the waterline. It's okay. It's typical of our world today. We're just all above the waterline.
Well, interestingly enough, thinking about the horrific earthquake over in the Asian continent there, we watched a little documentary on the Cascade Plate,
yeah,
22 miles off the coast here of the island, and it was outlining all the weird and wonderful things that could happen when the big one comes, not if the big one comes, I guess, anymore. And they're talking about keeping it above the water. They figure that if the big one comes as it's anticipated at least a 9, that we will get a 20 meter tidal wave on the first go round through here. So tsunami, I guess we should call them now, not tidal waves, but so it'd be interesting. It'd be an awful lot of waterfront property for sale, I think.
20 meters?
20 meter, yeah.
Okay, so the average building is what, a floor in a building is?
8 feet.
Eight feet, what's that? Okay, so maybe 6-7 meters?
Yeah.
So you're talking a three-story high wave of water, essentially.
3 or 4, yeah. Yeah, they focused on a little place called Oceanside in Oregon, which is basically 2-3 meters above the ocean, and the University of Oregon had made a little presentation of the whole city mapped out kind of to scale, and they generated a tsunami at that particular level and watched the way the waves came in and bounced off of buildings, and there was one building right at the front of the town, which is looked like it was maybe 4 or 5 stories, and it was just completely overwhelmed with the water. So can only hope that with our current governments in place that they start looking at this. I know here in BC the budget cuts have removed all but a small portion of our armed forces that would be able to respond to that kind of a disaster. We don't even know if they would be able to get over the mountains to get here. You know, would the roads and the infrastructure allow them to do that? Would I don't know. It was a good wake-up show in many sense. I mean, basically, when the big one comes, we're going to be kind of stuck on our own out here, probably for a long while.
When you look at some of the commentary of the consequences of the earthquake in Turkey, which, by the way, is over 40,000 people now who are noted to be deceased. One of the issues was that a lot of the buildings weren't up to code, in spite of the fact that the government had set out very strict codes for construction. Since they are in an earthquake area, to you know, mitigate the kind of damage that the earthquake brings, and you know, a 7.9 is apparently just about as devastating as you can get to. How much of this sort of standard is imposed on buildings in your neck of the woods?
Well, the newer buildings are supposedly earthquake met with high standards. They're retrofitting a lot of older buildings, particularly schools and educational institutions. But it seems to me that we're losing out a bit on our training. Right? I mean, it might come up again and it might start, but having your grab bag, you know, so that, you know, if you have, you're out away from your house, do you have what you need? Do you have any kinds of, you know, access to your medications? Do you have space blankets? Do you have food? Do you have water? At home, it's the same thing. Yeah. Well, very, very poignant point. The one woman who was looking at this said, have a pair of hard-toed shoes and a hard hat and a pair of leather gloves, preferably under your bed at all times, because when you go out, there's going to be a lot of glass, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to be laying around, and there's still going to be stuff probably falling. So you're thinking, well, I don't know about a hard hat, but.
I remember vaguely when we were kids, we had all this sort of preparation in the when we were in elementary school about if there's a war, a nuclear war, we all hide under our desks. But we did have a program of, and I guess it might have been a holdover from World War II of what to do in case of attack. And there were civil defense sort of programs. And again, I in the blur of time, because it was some time ago. But you look at some of the old movies and you see the civil defense programs of where to go to shelter and what have you. Particularly, our neighbors in the South had a much more sophisticated approach to it than we do here in Canada. On that, there were shelters in major urban centers, and they had these triangular signs with circles in a circle. I remember on buildings that this was an approved. Where have all those gone to?
Well, out here they
Which is, I'm sorry, which has nothing to do with earthquakes. I'm just saying that,
well,
preparedness.
the preparation is the I guess what government should be concentrating on and looking after issues that were coming. Nobody wants it to happen on their watch. And hopefully it won't. But out here, there was quite a controversy about putting up this is a tsunami zone signs, because a lot of people are saying, well, that's going to affect our building. Nobody's going to come and visit us because they're going to say we're in a tsunami zone. And like everything else, the sign goes up, there's the fors, there's the against, and eventually the signs are there and everybody looks at them and goes, oh yeah, well, I guess we look for the sign that says this is the way out and follow that. It becomes a bit of a second nature and not the issues that a lot of the naysayers have said. And I guess what makes me think about this is the governments have us looking at all kinds of things that perhaps that we as the population should be forcing back a bit and saying, no, I'm really not all that concerned about weather balloons. I'm more concerned about who's going to respond if this natural disaster happens or whatever,
Yeah, and so there's a lot of I guess politicking involved, because if you're looking at natural disasters, look at what happened just on February 3rd in Ohio, this freight train with these toxic chemical spills that took place when it derailed. And strangely, it didn't start getting any real attention till a couple of people pointed out it in essentially conservative media that, listen, this is a major disaster here. But if you listen to the wags, they're saying, well, yeah, but it took place in an area that's poor. It votes Republican, and so what? Now, I think that's a little extreme,
I think it is.
but there is something to be said for that, because it's only now that their authorities, such as FEMA and whatever, suddenly deemed it necessary to go see. When people like Erin Brockovich, who's a very famous environmentalist, and the darling of Hollywood, when they were going after the California Tilly Company, and they made a movie with Julia Roberts about it, and she's still around, and pointed out that you know, this is a huge environmental catastrophe that's taken place here. I mean, you may have to just basically bulldoze that town and move all those people out, because it's like a dirty bomb being dropped on a place. It's uninhabitable. The water supply could be totally destroyed, the groundwater. Anyway, the long and the short of it is, you know, sometimes there are forces that are involved that don't really see it as important. I, for example, if there was an earthquake, Washington or Ottawa was in an earthquake zone, you suppose they might have a different approach to it?
Well, I think it probably would. And yeah, I guess it gets back to the whole thing with an earthquake over in Turkey, Syria area. Terrible as it is, and as much as we're helping out as much as we can, although I think the Canadian government could have certainly stepped up to the plate a lot more.
Let's not go there, because it'll be a whole show just on that.
It doesn't really have the same impact, because it's really not in my backyard.
True.
So yeah, you're right. If the earthquake fault zone, the Cascadia plate that matches up with the San Andreas Fault all along the West Coast, was right down a straight line between Washington and Ottawa, yeah, there probably would be a lot more civil defense. There would be a lot more planning. There would be a lot more training. There would be way more for the supposed best and brightest to be looked after in the event of a catastrophic event. But that's human nature, I think. There's been so many movies made about it that it really doesn't matter what's going on the other side of the world until it personally affects me.
But you know, there are hot spots that are of interest to the leadership, certainly here in North America, Canada, the U.S., where you know, the Ohio thing points it out, you know, very clearly to the observer that was the 3rd of February. Today is the 18th of February. That's you know, it's 2 weeks ago that this took place. And really, the consequences of doing zip have only been really brought about in the press in the last 3-4 days by people who have been unrelenting about reporting on it, and basically shamed various leaders into acknowledging that this is really an environmental catastrophe. And this from leadership that continually goes on and on and on nauseam about, you know, the environment and how we have to do this, and, you know, climate change. You know, they sing the song, but when it comes down to, well, where do we, you know, how can we make this, turn this into a vote or make us look good? Well, you know, those people down there in Ohio, they're just a bunch of poor old sods. Who cares? You know, they're neither here nor there in the big scheme of things. And, you know, you're right. It just goes to show what I call lousy leadership that we're having in these days on so many levels. But hey, you know, I feel those folks, I think the town has a population of 5,000 or something. You know, maybe in the calculus of the geniuses who run the bigger show, what's 5,000 people? We'll just move. What the heck? Big deal. You know, and it's the same with, as you pointed out, with the interest in the tragedy over in Turkey and Syria. Yeah, they're way over there. You know, they're not, big deal, right? Yet we're drawn to the attention of stupid things now in retrospect, stupid things like the balloons that turned out to be purchased at Hobby House or whatever. And give me a break. That has turned out to be such an embarrassment to so many people. But, you know, it's very cleverly, wallpapered over by the fly-by media, as you call it, because they were just balloons. And the amount of, you know, this is the same crowd that talks about misinformation, disinformation, malinformation. Boy, they if you want to talk about experts on delivering that three information types, they're good at it.
They're all politicians, you know, and I think that's probably, there must be a special class that you have to take and pass in order to be able to get to that level. I don't know.
No, I think at first you have to go through the various programs that teach you greed, avariciousness, sloth, you know, those seven sins. Once you pass the seven sins program, then you get to be a politician. Then you get to go to the high-tech stuff about mis, dis, and mal.
And, you know, it's sad. We've talked about it before, but, you know, in Canada, we had great, I wouldn't say great, maybe. We had very, very strong leaders who people could look up to. And they may not fall them off the bridge if they jumped. You would at least maybe give it a second thought. Now, you know, those kinds of people are missing, few, far.
Yeah. Well, I think really there's only one word that sums up our situation with vis-a-vis leadership is lack of trust. Trust is gone. They have, they, you know, in and it might be a nostalgia thing, but in the past, there were people who you didn't like, whether it was their looks or their politics or whatever, but you trusted what they said because they were, you know, they were more honest than dishonest, I guess is the best way to put it. But you trusted that what they said was fact. Or by omission, if they didn't say anything, you knew what the problem was, okay? They didn't make up a story 180 degrees the other direction, trying to convince you that all is well, when in fact nothing is well at all. And so you're right.
Yeah, and just coupled with that, watching that documentary we watched last night, it had old clips from a couple of Canadian news outlets, and the technology has changed so much that, you know, I could take my smartphone and go down and make a podcast of the natural disaster, but we didn't have that kind of technology, particularly I'm thinking 1964 with the earthquake in Alaska and the tsunami that it sent up to the town of Port Alberni. Well, they had, you know, the map, and here's Port Alberni, and this is the way the water falled, and there was no way that newscaster was leading you to believe a story. You know, they were reporting the facts as they had them as they were coming in, you know, and that's what kind of made me think, gee, we used to have a armed forces base out at Chilliwack that, because of budget constraints, et cetera, blah, 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 they took that whole base, and I think they've got a small mechanized unit there, but nothing that would be able to respond to the events that should unfold. But there, they had pictures of the armed forces and the Coast Guard and everything in 1964 within 24 hours on the ground in Port Alberni to help the people out. And it goes back to what we said before. Would they have shut that base down if the fault line was running on a direct line 22 miles away from Ottawa? No, they certainly wouldn't have. They'd have probably built that up. They'd probably have two or three mechanized units. The Washington area might have, I don't know, what branch is that? I keep on thinking of the Seabees that go out, fix and repair things and blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where does this go? Well, how does it relate to what we do? Well, it goes back to leadership. We just don't seem to have that. We don't seem to.
Well, we have leadership. We just don't have any trust in them. I think, you know, see, leadership is something that works when the followers believe in the leader, not on an ideological level so much, although that history shows lots of them, but really it comes down to, is this person someone who I believe is telling me the truth, or has my interest as paramount and not some ideological program or themselves that interest, but, you know, the level of unethical behavior has seemed to become a, well, that's okay. You know, it's if I promise not to do it again, I won't do, you know, it's just what we have, particularly, unfortunately, in this country with senior leadership that gets caught in more unethical behavior than I can ever remember any government in my time. And, you know, we're getting up there now, aren't we, apparently. And you think, how is that possible that, well, yes, I did X, Y, Z. It was unethical. I shouldn't have taken the money. I shouldn't have given the money. I shouldn't have said no when it really meant yes. It doesn't matter what it is, but I won't do it again. And okay, that's fine. Well, that's, you know, can you imagine if you go to the bank and you go, you know, I haven't paid my mortgage, and I'm sorry, I just can't, you know, I forgot to do it. They don't care. Yeah, your house is gone, you know? But this bunch that's in charge now, they seem to have a different rule book, or they've created one which in the bubble of Washington or Ottawa, that's okay in that bubble, you know, because the rest of the serfs can just, you know, pound salt.
Yeah, and you're right, you alluded to it, but you also forgot one very, very big part of that whole stand up in the press, you know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. It's the times we live in, but you know it. I'm at a loss for words because there's nothing. There's what do you say about this? You know, you can whine and complain, but where are the people on the where's the cavalry coming to save us on this, you know?
Well, we can only hope that somewhere.
I don't know. I don't think there is I think that's a myth. Because in fact, when they do show up, they're going to find that the place has been destroyed. There's nothing to save. You know, we were going to talk about borderless stuff today on our last podcast. So, you know, let's talk about a world where there are no borders. And what would that look like? And I was thinking about it in actual fact. You know, what would all these characters we're alluding to at the moment, these people we don't trust, what would they be doing when all of a sudden, you know, there's no point in them making rules about things like borders and movement because they're irrelevant. There are no borders. There are no rules.
Yeah.
What would they do then?
It would be very, very interesting to sit back and you think, okay, well, we're talking people, we're talking migration, but it goes well beyond that.
Sure it does.
Stop, the importation of, you know, God forbid, the European butter, for heaven's sake, that is supposedly better than our butter. Well, it can't be better than our butter, but a lot of this, they you have to sit back and, yeah, what would they be doing? You know, would that actually be a good thing?
No, but you think about it. If there is no ruling class, because that's what we're talking about here, you know, in actual sense, they got voted in, but they are a very strange breed now. They're not the same sort of folks who the general electorate voted for, because if they were trusted and liked, they wouldn't have to go on and around in town in 15, 20 car convoys protected from the people who love them. You know what I'm saying? So
that's also a bit of a change in population and attitudes, and it goes back to what you said before. Well, even the people that I would have considered not hero worship, but they had their own enemies, and you know, and unfortunately, with particularly, I guess, going back to our neighbors to the south and in the assassination of their president. The attempted assassinations on the Pope, you know,
there's always screwballs. I understand that.
And because of those little screwballs, then it kind of affects. And I kind of wonder, did the distrust in our political leaders, did they go down even farther when they started to surround themselves with bulletproof glass in their cars, and I don't know.
Well, I see there's certainly a pathological difference that way in North America than there is perhaps in Europe, because European leaders sometimes take the bus to work. You know, I mean, it's you look at some of the heads of state of these other countries, and they walk down the street, you know, and they go to the local restaurant and have dinner. You can't, our illustrious leaders can't do that because they're either afraid or they really are at risk. Take control. It doesn't matter which one it is. Now, why is it that they're afraid of their own constituents, or why are they at risk? Well, you know, if you compare it to the folks who are in equal positions of stature within their community in these other countries, well, maybe it's because, you know, those folks see them as part of the community, not something special. And I think that's part of the problem. Yes, you're right. If you go back to the Kennedy years, the November assassination 63 of Kennedy, you realize that years afterwards they came up with the Warren Commission, and no one believed on how this. I mean, it was to this very day there are physical mysteries that couldn't possibly, or physics rather, that couldn't possibly have happened, you know, the bullet that goes backwards and forwards and stuff like that, and the whole questioning of who in whose interest was that report, and who wrote it, and you know, in the space of time 50 some years later, you know, stuff sticks out and you go, this is silly.
But I guess going back to what you were talking about before too, is maybe the world without borders, maybe we should be looking at some of the European countries and what makes their leaders less afraid to travel in the public. What qualities do they have? Is that something that we should be demanding in our own politicians? And if we got to that point where there was no malice, there was no, well, other than the odd wingnut that you're always going to have, would that make this transition to a no borders world better? I don't know.
Well, maybe. I think it's essentially, if we take the concept of a no borders world, everything becomes local.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have some mysterious character thousands of miles or kilometers away directing your life. You know, and the closest you get to this individual is a TV screen or a monitor on your laptop or phone. And they live a lifestyle that is entirely different from the vast majority of the people who they govern. And then the whole question of, well, wait a minute, who serves who here? Do the governed serve the leader, or does the leader serve the governed? And now we have a lot of questions that are being raised on that, like, you know, who's in charge here? Are the people in charge, and are the folks who they've elected in charge but not doing what they got elected to be in charge for?
Well, I kind of wonder, again, I've had it said to me before, maybe people get into this with good intentions. Remember the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington or something?
Love that movie.
And I think that's, in an ideal world, that's what you get. You get some idealistic person who wants to go and make changes. And then, as you say, they get there and find out that the system is so, I don't want to say corrupt, but so entrenched.
I'll say corrupt.
And, well, you know,
listen, you have to be, if you're going to go into politics and you're going to be that a leader, you do have to make some compromises. There's no
question about it. I agree. But
because everybody, you know, is not going to be in agreement. But compromise doesn't mean you sell out to any
particular group. No, and I guess that's the issue is that do they get browbeaten down? I'll support you on this motion and this vote, but you have to support me on that one. And then I think that's where it gets broken down. as a system because you have so many IOUs out there that it becomes very hard to get anything really done that should be done. And it goes back to what I was saying before. Now, if we didn't have a system of IOUs, would we still have a military base out here in Chilliwack that would be able to respond to natural disasters? And part of that, they say, was budgetary cuts. Well, what happened with the budget? Well, why did we not be able to keep that piece of land, that detachment there that is now, I think, in Edmonton?
Yeah, but they didn't ask the people in your neighborhood about that, did they?
No.
So what it comes down to then is maybe a borderless place is actually not a bad idea combined with today's technology. Maybe we could have a lot little more direct representation on decision making through technology that already exists. Maybe we need more referendums, local and regional and even national, instead of leaving it up to the eggheads, supposedly, who we don't trust to make decisions for us. I mean, there all are, we can look at alternatives. And I hear some of the folks, particularly the legacy political establishment, oh, you can't do that. Can't have a referendum. The people don't understand. They're not smart enough to really, we know better because
On
we've
certain,
got the
on certain
background.
things, it is. And I think that goes back, even referendums are probably a good idea. But you have to have the ability to get the message out on what people are actually voting for and how they're voting.
Yeah, but the messages,
I
we're inundated with messages, Bob. 24/7,
know.
we get messages.
That,
Real,
that's, and that's
truthful,
part of the
untrue, I mean,
problem.
whatever. But I mean, it's time to be able to let people become more directly involved in what's happening in their own community. I don't want some faceless bureaucrat. I mean, if you want to use the European version of an example in the last 6 minutes or so that we have. There you have a whole bunch of folks sitting around Brussels who haven't got a clue outside of the bubble of Brussels, telling 27 countries citizens, what length of windshield wipers permitted on their car, and that would be the most banal version. But then they have the other ones like you must adhere to our political views on X, Y, and maybe W. Because if not, you're going to be sanctioned. And you go, wow. And these people aren't elected. And it's clear that the hybrid elitist bunch that's developed in Brussels, I don't want any part of that. Thank you very much. That is way out of control.
And I think the European Union as it was perhaps envisioned might have been a good thing.
It was and still is, I think, on so many levels.
It is standardizing. We have to have a 13 millimeter raising on our windshield wipers. Well, is that really necessary? Does it really make whether it's 13 millimeters or 15? It doesn't really matter. So you get down to the esoteric crap when they should be looking at the big things.
Well, but that's the danger because they do think they can do the big things, which is deciding, where we're going to have go to war, where we're going to put sanctions on countries, where we're going to develop relations with. I mean, this is all decided by people nobody elected, right? The no border stuff, if we're going to look at it in a comparative North America, and really we're only talking Canada, US, so. I'm sorry to our Mexican friends. They're kind of on the periphery of this discussion for all sorts of reasons. But the fact that you can travel through 28 countries in Europe through a border and only the signs change in languages, is great. There's lots of the free movement of people there is great. But now they're running into the problem of what does the free movement of people mean? The people in the south of Europe are inundated with Maghreb migrants and Asians coming in. And once they get to Italy or whatever, they're heading north. There's no more borders. So the poor southern states of the European Union, they're tasked with protecting all the rich guys in the north of it. So some things work and don't work. And yes, and for our community, we know they have Frontex, Coast Guard, whatever that's now been created out of whole cloth to be, pretend to be kind of another European army to protect the borders, but it's really quite useless, as everybody sort of knows. But in a North American context, imagine if all of a sudden there's no border between Canada. I mean, really no border between the Canada and the U.S. It basically just puts a whole bunch of folks in two departments of out of business. I mean, you know, what are you going to do with all those CBP, CBSA guys? Well, they're going to be looking for other jobs. Technically, the interconnection on trade and commerce between these two countries is you know, imperceptible in many ways to outsiders, because it's all interlocked, you know. And during the pandemic, discovered how interlocked it was when they decided truckers couldn't cross the border unless they had their vaccinations. All of a sudden, you saw car plants shutting down because they didn't have parts, and so on. So, you know, if we were to say, okay, there is no border, well, then what would then beyond that, what do you do with the issue of global migration? Who's responsible for that? So all those people coming up from Mexico, they wouldn't have to go to Roxton Road. They just carry on, you know, find their place wherever, as far as you know, that movement would go. And then what's downloaded to all the local communities? Because
there's a lot of issues to look at.
Because now the download to local communities is whether you like it or not, it's going to be downloaded, because we decided in Ottawa or Washington, you're going to look after these people. Well, nobody asked me to look after these people. I'm more interested in the potholes on my street being filled than worrying about some guy from Nicaragua who's going to come here and be on some sort of dole. Anyway, that's the extreme version. But, you know, they don't remember the local people.
It is, and in the last minute here, I don't think we solved the problems of the world.
No, yet. We're going to have to do part two on this. Part two on the 25th of February.
Stand
we didn't
up.
Even get into the balloons. My goodness. Or we didn't get into that thing in Canada about the truckers report let's not do that. It'll ruin. This was a good show. Let's not ruin it with.
Let's not ruin it with the bad things.
That's right. All right. I'll see you in a week's time, Bob.
You bet. Have a good week and the rest of the week.
You too. Take care. Bye.